Postcards from Beyond, written and narrated by Paul Harris. Beyond Time and Space. One of my students gave me a card for my birthday. On the front was a cartoon of a chicken having an argument with an egg, and the egg is shrugging and saying, "Well, let's not worry about it. All that matters is we're both here now." There are lots of theories concerning the first beginnings of things. It's a hot topic. Many people seem to think that it's through understanding our origins that we can solve the whole mystery of our existence and therefore our suffering. At the beginning of his book, A Brief History of Time, the renowned theoretical physicist Stephen Hawking tells the creation story of the Bushongo people of Central Africa. They believe that before us, there was only darkness, water, and the great god Bumba. One day, Bumba, in pain from a stomachache, vomited up the sun. The sun evaporated some of the water, leaving land. Still in discomfort, Bumba vomited up the moon, the stars, and then the leopard, the crocodile, the turtle, and finally humans. Whether we argue that time and space all began with a super high-powered tiny dot spontaneously exploding, or with a deity troubled by wind, neither view actually resolves the mystery of our existence. As we all know, for every effect there is always a prior cause. From where did Bumba and his grumbling tummy appear? And what did cause the Big Bang to occur? Can something arise from nothing? Or is there only infinite regression? Where do things begin and where do they end? Could there ever be such a thing as a causeless cause? People talk about creation myths, but could it be that the very notion of first beginnings is the real myth? Could it be that there never was a universe, as we normally understand it to be, that exploded into life 13 billion years ago? Perhaps what does ultimately exist, the ever-changing flow of conscious experience, is a process occurring outside the constraints of time altogether. To most people, the perception of an indubitably real universe is so strong that any talk of it being otherwise is likely to be dismissed out of hand. Sometimes, however, you have to be prepared to take a risk, to think outside the box, and find a way to circumvent the limitations of conventional thought and fixed perceptions. So, as a little thought experiment, let's consider this. Why do we always assume that existence flows in a straight line? Why couldn't it be spherical instead? Imagine an ant crawling on the surface of an orange suspended in space. No matter how long and hard he travels, neither the orange's beginning or end will be discerned by that ant. The nature of the orange isn't the problem. It's the ant's limited view of things that's the problem. So it is with existence itself. Only if it's assumed to be linear, like a piece of string, are we forced to consider beginnings and endings and causeless causes. The Buddha stated that one cannot reach the end of the world through travel. What did he mean? In the Buddhist view of life, the world of duality, samsara, is a beginningless, endless cycling of conscious experience. and no amount of travel through either time or space will ever bring you to the end of it. For, at the epicenter, keeping the wheel in perpetual motion is simple cause and effect, the law of karma. This law states that all self-conscious volitional activity must produce results, and those results are to be consciously experienced as the feelings and perceptions that arise due to sense contacts. It is to experience the results of past action that the present mind-body complex exists within an environment that offers suitable life support and with which it interacts. That being the case, there now arises an endless stream of sensory contacts, feelings, and perceptions. Some are agreeable and much sought after. Others are unpleasant and unwanted. It's in response to this constant flow of resultants that new self-conscious volitional activity is performed, constantly seeking out the desirable and trying to avoid the undesirable. It's these fresh desires for yet more sensory experience and renewed existence that will necessitate the production of future mind and body. So each moment in the stream of conscious experience has both active and passive phases, causes and effects. Each action will condition another result, and each result will condition another action. This same fundamental pattern, which in Buddhism is called condition-dependent origination, or paticca-samuppada, is repeated at all levels of existence. It occurs within each moment, throughout the course of a lifetime, and with each subsequent rebirth. This is why no action can ever get you off the wheel of becoming, because it's the very actions you perform that propels the cycle. And so it goes on, and round and round and round again. Here we can see the stark difference between the Buddha's description of the world and the scientific theory of materialism that is so in vogue at the moment. Science contends that the universe is fundamentally physical in nature, and that the arising of consciousness is an epiphenomenon, the accidental outcome of the coming together of material processes. It's undeniably the case that material processes are involved in the production of conscious experience, and to this degree Buddhism is in agreement with science. Gotama further understood, however, that the arising of the material processes that help enable consciousness to occur do so as a result of prior craving. Looked at this way, the universe appears very different indeed. Rather than being an outcome of chance, everything in the material universe, from the smallest atom to the largest star, is actually part of the process that allows resultant conscious experience to emerge. To this end, the creator of this vast, infinite, dualistic universe is simply the prior volitional desire for it. As the Buddha stated so emphatically, mind is the forerunner of all things. This includes even time, space, and matter. That's why the Buddha would never answer questions about the first beginnings of things, as such questions could only be formulated based on a false first premise. The truly timeless nature of existence really becomes obvious when we practice vipassana. We focus our attention on the transient and conditioned nature of all sensory events. Doing so, we become increasingly aware that any moment of conscious experience arises and passes away again instantaneously, and that there is absolutely no remainder. That's to say, nothing whatsoever is found that persists from the past through to the present and into the future. Not consciousness, not the object of consciousness, not the media of sense, not the perception of the object, not the feeling that arises, nor the volitional response to that feeling. As our discernment deepens and the insights keep coming, we comprehend that the entirety of subjective experience comes into being now and ceases now. It's woven together by an infinite array of impersonal conditioning forces acting upon one another only instantly to dissolve again. Insight wisdom drives a wedge of understanding between the world as conceptualized by thought versus the world as actually experienced. Only in the conceptualized version is there a past, present, and future. In actuality, there is only the moment, this moment, now, which is not time-bound. For the practicing Vipassana meditator, the Big Bang did not happen 13 billion years ago. If there's a Big Bang at all, it's happening right now. The enlightened mind intuitively understands the illusory nature of existence. Notions of time and space are founded on comparison and the relativity between things. They, therefore, only pertain where there is a dualistic consciousness, i.e., the assumption of self and other. In the absence of dualistic consciousness, there is only that which is, the non-dual, without center or circumference. That understanding is not, in itself, subject to the vagaries of passing time. It is not a thing that exists in relation to other things. It does not come and go. It is totally beyond time and space. All questions about the beginning and ending of the universe dissolve in the light of this understanding. Understanding gleaned not from speculation, conjecture, or supposition, but from the simple, unbiased observation of reality as it really is. It's not that you are trapped by time. You are beyond time. You are trapped only by the assumption of your own separateness. This takes as absolute truths the concepts of self and universe, and gives rise to all the emotional attachments that are subsequently formed because of that division. Enlightenment is to surrender everything to the wonder and the mystery of existence. There is a total and joyous surrender to the infinite unknown. You hold on to nothing, seek for nothing, and retain nothing. Freed from the limiting, repetitive, and unsatisfactory cycles of samsara, you find that to dwell in the great timeless mystery is all you ever wanted. In fact, you realize it's all that there has ever been. Temporarily covered over by ignorance, but now blazing with the brilliance of a million stars.